Welcome back to Musings of a Book Collector. In today's episode, I would like to focus on two new autobiographies that were just published, one a little bit after Pesach called Hayisi, Talmud B'Yeshivas Chevron from Meir Tzvi Groizman, which is his Zichronus as a Yeshiva Bacher learning in Chevron, the years 1952 to 1958, and a book that came out last week, Lev Nemon, which is the volume one of the autobiography of Rav Meir Mazuz, who was just Nifter Shvi Shel Pesach this past year. So I would like to focus on these two autobiographies. Now, I feel bad, just a short introduction, but experts have explained to me that this is what one needs to do for fundraising. Baruch Hashem, I've been giving Shiurim via Olda for some time now. I began back in January 2021 as an experiment where I spoke about the machine matzah controversy. The idea was to create supplementary material for Daf Yomi learners. In March of 2021, we continued with this experiment where we began talking about Masechta Shkalim, why it is even in the Daf Yomi cycle, and different Perushim on it. And from there evolved a series which we release almost every Masechta, which is how the Masechta is learned throughout the ages, focusing on the Gaonim, the Rishonim, Achronim, and other interesting things. We have also added other types of topics along the way, including, so far, we're in the middle of season three of an in-depth discussion of Reb Chaim Kanievsky's Sfar. I honestly never imagined it would work out at all, never thought this would happen, but as we know, Hashem's ways are not for us to understand. Some episodes that we recorded over time were sponsored, others not, which means that I end up doing it for free. The preparation of this year requires many hours of meticulous research among rare and obscure Sfar. A while ago, recognizing that sponsoring an entire episode, or even half of one, is not always feasible, a new method was created to allow listeners to access significantly more content, at the same time to support this endeavor, whether on a monthly basis or even just occasionally once in a while. These episodes can be accessed under the umbrella title Musings of a Book Collector. How you can sign up, you could go to eliezerbrot.com. There you can learn how to access the free episodes, which are hopefully released a few times a month, as well as premium content, which includes episodes from different series which are available behind the paywall to members. Based on requests from listeners, we recently added that one could buy individual episodes on Buy Me a Coffee. For more information about this, contact me at eliezerbrot@gmail.com. Now for the main feature. So, as we know already, this is called Musings of a Book Collector. So, as a book collector, a genre of Svarim books that I love to collect is autobiographies, which is the excuse of this episode. And my fascination with this literature, autobiographies, goes back many years, which I'm not sure how it even started. As a Bacher, I started reading a bunch of them, eventually creating a mock list of books to show how you're considered a learned Yeshiva Bacher if you read following books. Some of the books that were on the list were biographical accounts, most notably the Mekar Baruch, the four volumes of the Torah Tamima, Rabbi Yaakov Emden's autobiography, the Adaris' autobiography, Rabbi Yudari Medina's autobiography, and much, much more. There were other books that were also on this list, not only the autobiographies, and maybe one day I'll talk about that. But point is that autobiographies was a fascination a while back, and in general, there are all kinds out there. Each one has a different style, focusing on different things. Some are personal, others are more general about life. Some, Lamashal, talk about Gedolim that they met, random people that they met. Some are dark, some are gloomy, and others are very nice and positive. There's a nice amount of academic literature on this subject trying to deal with this, most notably a book called Autobiographical Jews, and a more extensive book from a Marcus Mosley called Being for Myself Alone, Origins of Jewish Autobiography. While these books have attempted to make sense of this genre of autobiographies, I feel there's still a lot that needs to be done. They do not make enough use of the many works that are out there. There's not even an index, nothing to do with them, but there's no index of all the autobiographies that are out there. How far back does it go? What's the first one? What's the later one? Okay. Why I personally like this area and why other people like this area, I don't know, but suspect maybe it has to do with Jews are Yentas, so it gives you context and the backstory to a lot of history. Now, sometimes it feels like you're a fly on the wall. Let's say back in Volozhin and 1870, etc., you see someone's recount his impression of the Netziv, how he walks in the first day and what he saw by the Netziv. Fascinating for some people. For me, in addition, it also gives us a glimpse of how life was practiced. As many of these autobiographies talk about the Yom Tovim, Minhagim, and I like to trace the origins of various Minhagim, so this is a helpful tool, which Amir Tzashem, the next episode, we covered Shavuos, that's coming quickly upon us. We'll focus on what we could learn from various autobiographies about the Chag of Shavuos. Now, one thing one has to be aware of when you read autobiographies is a concept that Professor Shaul Stampfer, in his monumental work on the yeshivas of Lita, Lithuanian yeshivas of the 19th century, writes, when he's discussing the sources that he used for his book, he uses memoirs, and he says, but this category is the most important. And like every other source, it has both advantages and disadvantages. Why? Because memoirs sometimes provide a more detailed picture than official documents, but most are written many years after events described, and more than likely in consequence to suffer from only partial recall. They also reflect their author's attitudes at the time of writing rather than at the time of the events that they describe. So in most cases, says Stampfer, I have assumed that although they what was written may only be part of the truth, the authors would not have deliberately lied. Now, there's a lot to say about this, but that's an important point to make in general. In the two autobiographies that I'm focusing on this particular episode, it's much easier. And that is like this. Because both of these two autobiographies, one, the person's still alive. It's a very positive thing. I believe he wrote it over years of time. He didn't just like wake up 70 years later to write about it. And that's, I'm referring to Meir Grisman when he's writing about Chevron. And Rev Mazuz, it seems he was documenting his life from way, way back. This is materials that he had all the time. So I trust it. I trust him more than maybe some other autobiographies. But anyway, okay. Now, in general, there's a lot to say about autobiographies, and behind the paywall, one can hear an episode more in depth about Adaris's famous autobiography. I recorded one episode. Eventually, I'll record more about Adaris's autobiography. There's a lot to learn from it. And next week, in Mirtz Hashem, I'll release an episode about Pinchas Katzenellenbogen's autobiography, Yesh Manchilim, which is also a extensive autobiography was a lot to talk about, so that's a long episode which is behind the paywall. So that will be released next week. Okay, so today's first the first autobiography that I like to focus on is from Meir Tzvi Groisman, and it's called Hayisi Talmid B'Yeshivas Chevron. It's 321 pages. Now, my point is not to go into depth into all aspects that one can learn about from this autobiography. I want people to read it and enjoy it just like I have. A lot has been written about Chevron, and when it became from Slobodka to Chevron, for example, and all the different aspects of what the shittas of the yeshiva is, and with Musar and the founding of the yeshiva, and all different aspects, the gedolim of the Rosh Yeshivas, the mashkichim. For example, one could see the fascinating work from Shlomo Tkachinsky, and he also uses the various autobiographies that are out there, and there are others that were published since then, and a lot of books have been written in recent years about the various gedolim from Rosh Yeshivas of Chevron. Just to mention, because it just came out very recently, in the publishing house Blima, so they published a small book called From Tzvi Meroni, and it's called Hachaylamim B'Yerushalayim. It's about Yerushalayim in the late 1930s. And in there, it features a few pages of his visit to Chevron, and he's what he sees in the Chevron library, etc. So, this being that this is a podcast from a book collector, so I just wanted to highlight that. And another book, which relates to similar years, is a book I found very interesting. It's called A Treasure of Letters from Rabbi Lazar Reich. In the description of the book, it says, a yeshiva bachar's fascinating first-hand description of the world of Torah and Hasidus in Eretz Yisrael in the early 1950s. This book was published back in 2011. He wrote it as letters to his family back while he was learning in Chevron in the 1950s, which is the same time that this Meir Tzvi Groisman was also describing those years. Now, sadly, when I finished the book from Rabbi Reich, I was so sad because he discusses all different impressions of visiting all over the Gedolim Eretz Yisrael. I was so sad that it came to an end. I wish that he could have written more letters back in that time. Anyway, okay. So now, focusing on this book from Meir Tzvi Groisman, it comes out shortly after Pesach. And as I said, it's 321 pages. Right away, you open up the table of contents and you can see what it talks about. He talks about the Rashi Yeshiva, the chinuch that he got in the yeshiva. He talks about the famous Musar Shitas. He talks about special days such as Shabbos, the Yom Tovim, Elul, Tishrei, Chanukah, other aspects of the of day-to-day life in yeshiva. He talks about the lunchroom, the Gedolei Rosh Yeshivas, the Mashkichim, and other aspects, and some other people that he came across in his time over here. In the introduction, he already says, it sounds like he wrote this over a long period of time. I don't know exactly when he started, but as we'll see, one of the things that's beautiful about this book is it literally takes you back to your kilu. You feel you're at the time right now in 1952, sitting with this bacher, this Greizmann, in walking into Chevron. What I mean like this. Towards the beginning of the book, he talks about the Faher, the acceptance exam to get in with his group of Bachram from what I guess Yeshiva Ketana, high school, whatever you want to call it. So he describes it, and you see it's something that plays out. Anyone who learned in Yeshiva, it's the same type of thing. You know, there's always the brave boy that wants to step forward. Everyone else is quiet, hiding behind him. And then the Rosh Yeshiva, whoever's giving the test, says, who wants to be first, and who's going to be the Nachshon and Aminadav? And the way he's describing it, this is very honest. But in the introduction of this book, he says it's very important now because he feels if people learn yeshiva, it will help give them an appreciation. It's a very positive, honest, innocent way of looking at the yeshiva world. He's not getting involved in complexities, in politics, all different things, which maybe some, you know, an academic version of discussing Chevron in that period of time would go into analyzing all different types of things. He's writing the things as he sees it at the time. So, as I said, he begins with the Bechina to get in, and then they get accepted. And he describes the excitement, you know, that he got into Chevron, which, you know, was, even today is somewhat of a chashuva thing to get accepted, not so easy to get in. And then they come the first day. He describes the first day. So, you know, this is like high school guys coming into a smedrish, like this elite school. And they don't know anything. There was no orientation, so to speak, beforehand or anything. Who to meet? No, no one's meeting them. No one's telling them what to do. Then they finally find out. Go to the Eitzer, get the Gemara, go sit down. There's nowhere specifically where you're supposed to sit. They begin to learn. Okay, so he begins to learn with a chavrusa of his, and he's describing it. It's literally as if he's writing as was going on his day, his first day. And then they realize, you know, that they're learning too fast, at the rate that they're going, within a few days they'll finish the Masechta. So they have to up the game, so to speak, start learning it more intense. And it's fascinating how he just writes it. He's literally taking you with him in the Beis Medrash, the first day, him and his group of friends in Chevron. It's like he was writing it as it was happening. That's how he gives you that feeling. Okay. You see him growing up as he describes the first day and more. And for example, he describes his first tefillas in the yeshiva. And then he realizes he finishes first. And he's looking around. He sees that they don't daven so fast. Everyone's davening much more slower. It's more... Okay. He also goes through other aspects of what he witnesses when he sees the Rosh Yeshiva walking in for the first time. Okay. And pretty much you're seeing him starting to grow, get older, realize that this is a new phase of his life and he has to act differently and much more consequences. Okay, then he gets to after Mincha, they go eat lunch. So where do you sit? He describes beautifully a few pages, literally the situation with the food and the matzah with the, you know, a new guy coming into these dining rooms in these yeshivas, where are you supposed to sit? And you feel, you know, you're not at a place until you get your place where you're... Okay, and he, Derech Agav, he mentions that, you know, it wasn't so, don't think that they had so much food at that point in time. He discusses that very nicely. It wasn't all that Gashmius oriented like many claim today in the yeshiva world has been already for a while, where a lot of yeshivas already have great food. So he talks about that also. Now, then he finds out how you're supposed to find a table, and then how he describes it, and the fellow mates that he's sitting at the table, and how he gets to know them, and they're from a different world, they're more Hasidish, some of them, and how they start discussing, and what they discuss the first day, he's like, it's like he went back to his room, and he like instantly took notes, and he wrote it, and they spoke in learning, and each, a lot of the times also, and like it was, you had, this was a kfiyas tikamakam that you sat. So basically they had that each person had a, there was a rotation when you would say a small vard at the table. And he was just being blown away from all different things. He's a boy learning in a small yeshiva. Now all of a sudden he's coming to a big yeshiva and everything. He's seeing there's a big world out there, so to speak. He sees them quoting all different gemaras. He's getting, you know, like, oh, wow, this is incredible. These guys know so much. Then he sees they're benching even. It's something unique. Okay, anyway, the point is, you see, he's taking you through all this at the time. And he continues with moving on. Now, he talks about the various staff members, most notably Rabbi Chetzkel Sarna, Rosh Hashiva at the time. So he does say honestly that he didn't really understand his shiurim so much, but his shmuzin he was able to relate to much more. He says they were fascinating, and at one point he talks about Lamashal shmuz that he heard from him on Rosh Hashanah time, where Rabbi Chetzkel was masber the gra, how the gra held. Normally, a lot of times people are very sad when the shofar is about to be blown. The gra says not, and Rabbi Chetzkel explained it, the whole concept. And he said this was an eye opener in all the various shmuzin that he would hear from Rabbi Chetzkel. It totally changed the perspective of how he looked at all different types of things. One interesting shmuz that he said over was a story. Rabbi Chetzkel said over a story. Rabbi Chetzkel seemed that from time to time he had to go visit a doctor, so he would go on Fridays when it was less busy. And normally this doctor would take in Rabbi Chetzkel right away, didn't want to have to make him wait. One time Rabbi Chetzkel comes and there was a lady there with her kid, and the door opens and the doctor calls in the lady. And then afterwards, and then only afterwards, does he call Rabbi Chetzkel, as opposed to all the times, and he always called Rabbi Chetzkel first. So when he calls Rabbi Chetzkel, he tells him, you're probably wondering why this time was different, and I called her in. So he said like this. The answer is, this woman doesn't pay. She's very poor. She doesn't have money. So she's going to think, she's going to feel very bad if I skip her and do you first. So I gave her, so she should feel, not, she shouldn't feel bad. I went and did her first. And she shouldn't think I'm being mezalzel in her role because I'm doing it for free and not to embarrass her. So I took her first. So I'm asking you, Mechila. This is what he tells Rabbi Chetzkel. Chetzkel is very nispol from the story, and it seems he analyzes the story in a shmooze later on Friday night in yeshiva. And this Reb Meir Greizman, he was also fascinated with the story and he used it a lot. He ended up becoming a big educator and giving shiurim, so he always would tell it over and analyze it. He spoke over. Okay. He also discusses his impressions with other members of Yeshiva's Chevron, Reb Aaron Kayan, the great Goyen. So him, he had more to do with. He was able to relate to him more. And he also points out something that he noticed and a lot of people noticed about him, how he, since he was very sad always, he was in a lot of pain. It seems medically he might have had issues, but he also did not have children, but he still was unbelievable, his intensity and how he was able to learn and relate with the Bachram. And the Bachram had a lot to do with him, it sounds like, and he also did. And there's been a full book written about this great Reb Aaron Kayan. Another great Yid Rosh Hashiva in Chevron at the time was Ramesh Chevroini, also someone that was, he was very sick for many years, but he still Teich Yisurim. I heard this from my Rebbe many years ago. This is the one Yidia that I always knew about Ramesh Chevroini, was from my Rebbe, Rabbi Yaakov Kapel Alevi Berlovsky. He said this one time when we were collecting Gedolim pictures and we saw a picture of Ramesh Chevroini. He said this Yid was unbelievable. For 20 years, he suffered with tremendous Yisurim and he still was able to sit and learn, give Shiurim. So again, Ramesh Chevroini, it sounds like the Bachram, the Shiurim were great, but not necessarily the Bachram have so much to do with it. But the point is, each person that in the yeshiva, he discusses them and many other aspects that came up at that period of time, he has what to say from his tkufa in yeshiva. From time to time, the yeshiva will get visited by different people, random guests. He describes one time where Baron Cutler came and gave a shiur. And a different time, he describes how from time to time, the yeshiva will get visited by this known Eloi. His name was Yaakov Robinson. He was known as Yankel Rajkover. Now, this was a great Eloi. He knew all areas of Torah, but he was some type of for lack of a better word, not your typical type of person. It seems he was a shivery kli, very depressed. And he was from Litva, from a prominent Litvish family. His father was a Rav, and many different Gedolim knew him, and he would come talk and learning. He wrote all these, some Mamna Svarim that they've published, somehow they were published, and they're available maybe on Eitz HaChachma also. And people discuss him, but the point was he writes over a page about this great person, how he would come, and some conversations that he heard from him. And Lemaisa, he ends up, he has a levaya. I saw the newspapers of that period of time, and a lot of people come to visit him, but it was a known thing. A lot of times, the few yeshivas that were out there, they would get visited from time to time by, you know, some type of these random iluyim. I recall that Remarka Pragmansky, even though he was for a while in Telz, but even when he left Telz, from time to time he would come back to visit. And again, when he would come back, all the Bachrim would surround him and they would love to hear from him and all different types of things like that also. Okay, now, the Mashal, so there's a different conversation that also I found entertaining, because this is something that guaranteed happens very, very often in yeshivas, arayoy. It's Hanukkah time, so they're handling where one's supposed to light. If you're supposed to light where you sleep, you're supposed to light where you eat. So he says like this. And at that time, this is in the 1950s, so they're handling where the Chazanish said like this. Reb Shlomo Zalman said like that. Others said, oh, Rav Moshe Feinstein said like this. Others said, Rebbe Yasha said like this. And they start handling the Shaila and adding in their 2 cents. And this is a common thing, Ariyoim and the Olam HaYeshivas. Now, I found it interesting is that already back then that they were quoting Rav Moshe in Chevron and Rav Yashiv at that early time. I found that interesting. Okay. But the point is, as you go further, the Olam was discussing historical aspects, and they're talking about the Sefer Maccabeim, and then the... So they got into a whole discussion about the Sefer Maccabeim Bechlal, and where is it from? Is it a Jewish Makar? Is it a Greek source? And, well, it's fascinating, a few pages of the different conversations that was taking place in Yeshiva on Hanukkah Lamashal. Now, one other person that seemed to have made a very big impact on him was Reb Shalom Shadron. So in America, we're all very familiar growing up with, thanks to the work of Rabbi Pesach Kron, the Maggid says, and all the various books from the Maggid. So Rav Shalom Shadron in Eretz Yisrael was a legend. I've heard this from many different people. He was a master orator, and people just flocked to hear his shmuzen whenever he gave them, and people just loved him. It seems he was very, very gifted, you know, even without going to any training for it. And the Teichin was also fascinating, and he peppered it with all different types of things, his own, and from Gedolei Musar, from his Rabbeim. So he also talks about this a lot, about Reb Shalom Shadron. And interesting is that in an earlier place in the book, he talks about Shabbos. What did they do on Shabbos? So he describes for a few pages what they did. And then he says he gave a legend. Reb Shalom Shadron also gave this legendary shmooze. I think it was in Zichron Moshe. He had to schlep from Shari Chesed, and a big audience would come to Zichron Moshe, and we give a shmooze there. So he describes, like, you know, like a typical thing. You know, there was different kviyas. One guy set the shtender up, and one guy brought him his hot tea, and one guy did this, and the front seats and everything. Okay. Anyway, he said this was a master schmooze, and everyone found it fascinating. And, you know, it's not so easy, because Friday nights, it's not everyone's staying awake. If you ask Rabbanim across the globe, they'll tell you, or you just look around once, if you're not sleeping during a rabbi's speech on a Friday night, you'll see how many people are awake. So he somehow was able to keep the audience awake. So he just quoted a fascinating piece. Was about, there's a famous Gemara in Shabbos, which discusses about Ner Chanukah. It's 20, that if you light Ner Chanukah 20 amos high, it's possible. And the same, and right next to it, it brings another member from the same Reb Tanchum about the habar reik by mayim ain by of nechashim v'akravin yesh by the story with the bar with Yosef. So people ask, what's the connection? What's the shaychus? Why does it start talking about that? So there's a long, long list of darshanim. This is a legendary gemara that darshanim tried to come up with somehow. Besides for talking about the base Yosef's kasha and the drashas on Chanukah, they talk about this gemara, the kesher between these two stories, and why the gemara brings it down. So I have a Baruch Hashem over the years. I collected a long list one day, maybe to give a shiur explaining what the darshanim over the generations say about it. But the point is, Reb Shalom Shadron said he has his own thing, and in the course of the drasha, so he said, why is a guy even lighting 20 amos high? So he says that Bekitzer, he's nervous from his neighbors. He's embarrassed. The chiloinim and stam guests, they see that he's lighting downstairs. So he writes it. He lights it as far above that they shouldn't see. They shouldn't notice. He says that person ain loy mayim vein lo. He does it because the Gemara says ain mayim abar reikim by mayim mayim ain by am nuchashim akaram yeshba. You have to have guts. Don't be scared. Don't be scared about other people when you're doing mitzvahs. Anyway, as I said, there's much to learn from this particular autobiography. And Amir Tzashem, in the next episode about the autobiographies in Shavuos, I'll talk about what he says about the Chag of Shavuos in Chevron. But much more to say. Maybe a different time we'll come back to other aspects. But it's well worth to buy, to read, borrow, etc. this book, Hayisi Talmud by Yeshivas Chevron, Zichroinis Talmud HaYeshiva, Mishnois Tavshin Yud Beis to Tavshin Yud Ches. Okay. Now, the next autobiography I'd like to focus about is called Leiv Neman, Yoman Hagoyin HaNeman, Maran Rashi Yeshiva, Rabbeinu Meir Mazuz Zatzal. Okay, so now, Rav Mazuz is born in 1945. He just died a few months ago at the end of Pesach. Now, so the question is, obviously, this is a 436-page book, gorgeous pictures, fancy produced, you name it, documents, manuscripts of his writings to give it flavor. How did they put this out so fast? The answer is like this. They were working on it for over 10 years. And he even reviewed this volume and wrote notes on it. They gathered it from all different writings of his that he gave. They put it in order of the years. And this covers his life up, his first 28 years of his life up till 1973. Okay. Now, I'm not discussing all different aspects that one could learn from in here. There is just so much. Basically, I bought the book on Thursday afternoon, started reading it right before Shabbos with the goal of finishing it right away. Right before I recorded this episode, less than 3 days later, I finished the book. There's so much to unpack. My head is spinning from the amount of information, dozens of interesting types of things learned in here, side topics not only relating to him. So I'm definitely not going to attempt today to mention all the different things. There's a lot to learn from here about him. I'm not going to discuss in depth about him as a unique gadol. For the most part, the Ashkenazi world was not familiar with him, especially not in America, until recent years. For me, as a person brought up in the Ashkenazi world, it's a fascinating window into a world that I did not know much about. It's a sweet, positive, honest, describing a world that was back in North Africa, Tunis, where he grew up, describing his life there, including his chinuch that he got from his incredible father. He talks all about his father throughout the book and the impact that his father had on him. He was a great mechanich and a paisik in Tunis. And he goes through many different aspects and time, off the cuff, throws out all kinds of tidbits, gemaras, ramazim, tires of his, and sometimes short, sometimes long, all over. He was a very proud Sfardi, and he wanted Sfardim to feel proud that they're a Sfardi. There's nothing wrong with being a Sfardi. Now, I'm just going to mention a few of the different things throughout this book that I saw. And as I said, it's just endless how many different things I could talk about that I saw. And I highly recommend buying it. Again, Yachasi, it's not so cheap. But the price as far has been going up, and especially these fancy produced books on fancy paper, color print and everything, so it makes sense that the price is what it is, but that's how it works. You know, you want a good product, it costs money. Okay. So one thing is, it seems his parents had difficulty having children. A bunch of years. And they had a child, that child died, I mean, say before Amir Mazuz, and then they waited another bunch of years. And basically, the grandfather would learn Keseder, the Chibur Hilula der Amir, many, many different times. It was never, it didn't leave his table. And he made a Cheshbon that he, Amir Mazuz makes a Cheshbon that he must have went through the Chibur 160 times as a skula for, he said, and he said, Bechlau, they believe that there's a great skula in saying over, in different things, by saying over this Chibur Hilula der Amir. Now, obviously, there's a lot to discuss. What's this Hilula der Amir? What's the Sefer? What's, this is referring to Rameir Balanes. And who is Rameir Balanes? And what's the whole story behind it? But this was the belief in Tunis. This is his Zeda's, this was what his Zayda was Noyig. And that's how he was born. And eventually it seems that Rav Mazuz's Machon, they end up republishing this Chibur a few years back with a, I didn't see it, but a, it sounds like it had materials all about Rameir, etc., etc. Okay. So the book talks about his yichus, his father, and a lot about his upbringing. So he talks about how he remembers all different things. His first time he stood up, his first question in learning, and a lot of times he'll bring down these things in the book. He'll talk about the stories that he loved to read as a young kid, what he read, and the roishim that these stories made on him. He read a lot of Chassidish Maisis, or stories about tzaddikim, and it had a merdeka effect on them. Okay, Lamaisa at one point he talks about that Kabbalah. In general, he was not into learning Kabbalah. But it sounds like he was from where he grew up. Kabbalah was considered an unbelievable chashuva noisa, it wasn't stam that he learned it. He had to be roy for it. But maybe when he was young, when he was a little kid, he I guess the influence of reading all different sipurim of tzaddikim of all types. So he would read certain things, and he thought, and he's writing about this, he thought, this thing, I could run fast because I saw it in this sefer, how he understood a certain thing that you're going to, and he says, he even shows how he misunderstood the said thing, but it's funny, like, he talks about different things that he could run fast, because he was doing he was saying certain type of shame, but he eventually comes around and realizes that he's not doing it properly, and it's only for, you don't just damn do these types of things, and it doesn't just damn work for anyone, but okay, so like one thing, for example, he mentions as a kid, they used to love to wait for Sfir Saimer. Why? Because normally, the whole year around, they daven Mincha and Ma'ariv together. And they wouldn't wait for Tzeitzah Chachavim. But during Sfira, they waited an extra 20 minutes to do Sfir Saimer but Tzeitzah Chachavim. So during those 20 minutes, there was drashas in the shul. And they would read from various storybooks at the time, Isapella, other such Svarim. So we like to always get to hear all the different Svarim. Because they didn't have so many storybooks like, you know, the kids today have. Okay. So there's a glimpse in his youth, all types of things he mentions. Okay. There's even some dreams of his sprinkled throughout his book, dreams of his family members, one could find over here. And many different hanhagas of the Jews of Tunis. Whether he goes through all the Yom Tovim, various interesting things, various interesting minhagim, that his father was Nayig, on the Mashal, to make sure they wanted them to stay up for the Seder, or Shavuos night to staying up, so he would make sure they took a nap, and all different things. His father was Mamish Mashkiya in his chinuch with him, spent a lot of time on him, learning with him for many hours. Was very makbid on different things, on his education. But on the other hand, he says, and it's interesting to see this, he says, I don't remember even one time my father kissing me. He remembers one time, it was Derech Agav when he was six. He said when he would get sick and his father would ask him, how is he feeling? He would feel very good about that. So he remembers that very well. It stood out in his memory. But the point is that he still had unbelievable coveted respect for his father. And his father teaches him Torah and how to learn. L'mashal, Reb Mazuz is famous for his expertise in, let's say, slichus, and understanding the parish of davening, and the nuschais, and diktuk, all these types of things. He got the interest in it. It could be that he had an extra chush for it, but his father emphasized that his father would teach them before Shoshanah, before the El already, the minhag of Svardim, saying slichus already as El begins, to teach them so they should know what they're saying. And Bechlal, the Mahalach HaLimud, was a lot of emphasis on Tanakh, knowing Chumash very well, very clear with the Tamim. He got this all from his father, and most importantly, something that he's very proud of, and he always spoke about and wrote about, and this is for a different time, but it was called the Tunisia Iyun, where it comes from, their special level, what they feel is a special way of learning very, very Iyun. He got this from his father, who got it from his Rabbeim, from the great North African Gedolim, the Tunis Malach HaLimud, which also focuses a lot on Mamish learning the Gemara very, very clearly, getting the Cheshbonos very well. Marsha is Kodesh Kadashim. But not only Marsha, L'mashal Rashi, to understand every single letter in Rashi, what is behind it, why Rashi says it, was a very, very big emphasis. And all this he got from his father, but also learning Halacha, he also got from his father. He, in general, he enjoyed L'mashal He loves Svarim, and if throughout the book he'll talk about some sefer that he got, or he saw, or when he saw it, there's an artist that he wrote about it. But the point is, it wasn't just that he was the standard learning of Gemara, it was all areas. Lamashal. And this is what he became famous for. He was incredible Yiddish and Diktuk. Lamashal in Chachmas HaTchuna, he was very involved with. He wrote a lot about it. Had to write was also a very important thing. And all these things he got, on some level, I think it was from his father, but a lot of things I think he ended up expanding on it. He discusses Lamashal, the chashivas that he learned from the Gruz work on Mishnah's on Diktuk that he got. How it had a tremendous impact on him, and he maps out the different gedolim that had a big impact on him, most notably the Rambam and others. And Bekitzer, as you read this book, it's he's taking it's written beautifully. As I said, it's a very, very warm, positive book, taking you back to a time when there was much less distractions. You didn't have what to do. There was no computers or anything of the like. So you basically ended up learning. Interesting, as I said, throughout the book, he'll Klacher Yad mention something. So like all of a sudden he'll say, after he read all about the books about the Holocaust, it always had a big impact on him, and he felt he was always bothered. Why, Taka, wasn't there made a day for a tainus for the Yom HaShoah, for the people that died in the Holocaust? Okay. As I said, there's so much in here to unpack. At a certain point in time, and there's also a lot about his life and life in Tunis, so that's also its own fascinating aspects to discuss. But eventually, at a young age already, he starts teaching in Tunis and the yeshivas over there. And Lubavitch comes down there. He is very close with the Lubavitch Rebbe. He gets sends down a representative to help, and they build the yeshiva there. And he ends up working there. And it's fascinating to see how he becomes all of a sudden exposed to a whole different world of Hasidus. Didn't know much about it. He talks about the first time he hears about Nittel. He's already over 20 years old. Something like 19 or 20, something like that, when he hears about Nittel the first time. And how he learns to say for Tanya. Another point is when at a later point in the book, he starts talking about when he was 9 years old. The minig, his father and his grandfather, he benches bezimun. They asked the shaila, and that was the minig in Tunis to do such a thing. Okay, he writes chedushei Torah, interesting thing, and he ends up. It seems there was some type of all these different things you could send in. You write a piece of Torah, 2-3 page piece, and there's all different campaigns in Eretz Yisrael, and you get a prize in Svarim, and he writes, one time I think he wins a Shittim Kibetzes, other things. And here in this book, they have the picture, the piece of Torah that he wrote, a picture of it, in beautiful handwriting. As I said, he was very machped, and also on how to learn, how to write properly, put it down on paper. And with the rewards and the letters of thank you, and his father authenticating it that he wrote this sefer, he wrote this piece of Torah himself. All these cute things, as I said, mamish, a world that was. This gives us a glimpse into that world that at least I myself was not exposed to, and this is this century even. Another fascinating Arichos over here is his connection with, he ends up basically, which is the very sad part of the book, is basically his father, who, as I said, had a tremendous impact on him, gets killed. Discusses at length what happens, how he gets killed, and from then on they end up immediately making Aliyah, Eretz Yisrael, and that's towards the end of the book where they talk about him coming to Eretz Yisrael, making Aliyah, and he gets very close with the great Reb Avadi Yosef, becomes a tremendous chassid of his, and whole chapter about that, their relationship, and all kinds of interesting things about that. At one point, he ends up learning Kaseder Reb Avadi Yosef's material. He has correspondences with him. In his Kail, he ends up learning it. It seems they had a Seder to learn at least once a week, did various tshuvas, all types of things. He went to all different shiurim of his right away from towards the beginning of when he came. He was mamish blown away from Reb Avadi Yosef. At one point, he writes that they didn't have the Reb Avadi Yosef Svarim in Chutz Laretz. So he gets one of the tshuvas, Yavi Yomer. So he said, up till that time, I thought the person who had the best kayach of Hezber in Ksav was Reb Zevin. He was exposed to Ishim Vashitas, Me'adim Balocha. He says he got to Isha Meshitas when he was the age of 10. He says, I remember he explained, but sometimes you have to look up the Gemara from him. But he says, when he got to Rabbi Avadi Yosef, his Koich HaHesber, his Mamash HaTainig, when you read his farm, you don't even need to open up any Sefer. Now, nothing personal, and I'm not against if anyone is a chassid of Rabbi Avadi Yosef more than Rabbi Zevin, everyone is allowed to be a chassid of whoever they wish. But I must disagree with this. I've read many, many Svarim of Rabbi Avadi Yosef, and I would definitely not compare him in his Koich HaTziva to Reb Zevin. Reb Zevin was something else. He was in a league of his own. And just to anyone take out a Mayadim Balacha and read a Simon in Mayadim Balacha and compare it to a Tshuva in Rabbi Yoimer. I have no idea what he means over here. But as a Gaitas, this is what he says. And he's definitely a Mandamar to have entitled to his opinion. Another thing their Chagav was that the Kabbalah was that they went in Halacha. Tunis goes to the Magen Avram in our Chaim, as opposed to the Taz. So, of course, that was interesting idea for me, my quest on the Magen Avraham. And there's so much, so much more to unpack. Just to mention one last perek that I found very interesting. Basically, he comes to Eretz Yisrael, and he's giving tons of shiurim all over the place. And he ends up opening up his yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. And today, you go to Bnei Brak, it's a beautiful yeshiva. They've had many, many talmidim, and they have a full-fledged machon publishing tons of svarim, dozens of svarim of his, and all Chachmi Tunis, on all different subjects, even Nachzairim, Tikunim, you name it. It's a mapecha what he did, and part of his nekuda was to make that people, even of Tunis, or these of North African svaradim, should feel proud of themselves. He definitely accomplished a lot about that, putting them on the map. I mean, say many, many years ago, people barely ever heard of them. Okay. And in the course of the chapters of his giving all the shiurim, and he's working on, he published the materials of it, he worked on his Rebbe's tiras to publish it. It was very hard, and his father's tshuvas to work on to publishing it. So, And as I said, he's given many different shiurim. So it's interesting. He has a chapter over here, which you wouldn't expect to find. Different people have different shittas about this. I'll just quote what he says. I found this fascinating. He was asked all types of questions. Someone recently told me that he used to write letters to him, and at a certain point in time, he wrote to him back, "Please stop writing to me anymore. I pasha don't have any kayach." Not because he was against writing letters, just as he was getting older and he was being bombarded more and more. A lot of times, his gedolim, they become more and more famous, and more people ask them questions, and sometimes they're silly questions. So they say, please ask someone else. But so he complains that sometimes people would ask him all different types of things, favors. He says, "I'm a good person by nature. I like to do favors for free even." And they don't even say, "I got it" or "thank you." What's the big deal? You asked the guy a question. You wrote him a letter, whatever. At least do that. But then he goes even further. He starts talking about, he says, Lamashal in he found that a lot of times when you do something for free, not only do people not say thank you, then they end up having tainus. It's a known thing. He tells too, I think, a Gemara relating to this. And he says, the tzibur has to know that a Talmud Chacham, his time, is just as valuable as anyone else. He says it hit him in the following story. He needed to, at one point in time, he had something wrong with his washing machine. So he brought in a repairman. The guy did not have the part. Okay? But the guy says, "Okay, but I came down to the house, so give me my money." "What do you mean? You didn't repair anything." "What do you mean? My time." So he learned from there, you have to understand, just like that, just like it's pashut that there's a service fee for a repairman, and he didn't even do what he was supposed to do. He came down, he didn't have the part, he couldn't do it. Same thing with a Talmud Chacham. And he says that's part of the reason why a certain Sfaradi Gedolim, the Rambam and many others, they had professions so that they wouldn't need to take schar from the learning. Because he says basically is that sometimes the children of these Rabbanim or people that are Isaac and Tzarchei Tzibur giving shiurim and stuff like that, the children and their wives, they end up being very upset. "Look, someone's using my father and he's not appreciating him, so I'm not going to go in to be a mechanech. I'm for sure going to go work." Okay, there's obviously different gedolim have different shitas about this, what the extent is, and kiyadua, Rav Mazuz did help tons of people, and he didn't ask for fees of his thousands of shirim that he gave. But Baruch Hashem, over the years, he was matzliach, and he ended up, went from a small, no one heard of his stuff and his svarim and everything, that his gilyonis of his parsha sheets were being spread all over the internet and live hookups and videos afterwards. So eventually, people did hear about him more and more from outside his world. And Maisa, there's a lot to say about this chash of a yid, this chash of a unique yid that was just recently lifted. But this is just some of the few cute things when you read this autobiography of his that you can learn, well worth reading, looking at, borrowing. Fascinating to see Talmud Chacham with a positive. The only time that there's a sort of a sadness in the book, which is anyone, is when the murder of his father and the whole events and everything. But the way it's written, it's also written beautifully. As I said, he had a Mardukha Kayakhiva. He was very interested in emphasizing that. So these are just some of the things that one could learn from these two particular new autobiographies that just hit the market that I'd like to share with you today.